Good afternoon. I thank you for coming to our panel on women in baseball. I'm Leslie Heafy. For those who don't know me, in addition to being on the board of directors, I'm also the chair of the Women in Baseball Committee for Sabre, and it is my pleasure to have the opportunity to introduce this panel. We're excited. And what we're going to start today, for those of you who are familiar with the city in which where we are right now, has a number of claims to fame for women's baseball. But one of those, of course, is Edith Houghton. And so we thought we would start with a small tribute to Edith Houghton. And so I want to introduce Dick Rosen and tell you a little bit about Edith Houghton.
Thank you, Leslie. Edith Houghton died just a few months ago, about 10 days shy of her 101st birthday. She was a pioneer. She was a very fascinating baseball player. My only wish is that I could have seen photos of her and even see her play. She started out very early. At age 8, she was a phenomenon in the city. She couldn't wear a uniform because they all were too big for her. At age 10, she was playing with kids who were teenagers, boys and girls. And at age 12, in 1925, she went to Japan on a tour that was taken by the Philadelphia Bobbies, which was the team she played with. She was clearly the youngest of all these players, and she also was the star. The Bobbies had a former major league catcher named Ainsworth, who had caught Walter Johnson a few years before in the teens. And Ainsworth was really worried about whether he could get, throw the ball to second base as a former major leaguer, and was afraid he was going to knock this little kid off the park. And he decided to pay her 1 yen for every catch she got. She caught a whole bunch of stuff, and she said she never missed one of his throws to second and made herself a large number of yen. This is a picture of Philadelphia Bobbies. You can see this, and this team played in 25. They lasted. She came back in the late 20s and continued to play baseball in Philadelphia, and then even went to New York to play with the Bloomer Girls. She made $35 a week by taking the train from Philly to New York periodically whenever they played, and she never stopped playing baseball. The war interrupted her just as it did so many other players. She signed up very early to go to the Waves, and she served her country with the Waves during the early 40s, of course. And when World War II was over, she came back home and decided that she wanted to continue a career in baseball. She wrote a letter to Bob Carpenter. She prepared a scrapbook of all her accomplishments and left it at Bob Carpenter's desk, expecting that he would just throw it in the trash and that she would never, ever hear from him again. Strangely enough, given Bob Carpenter, she did hear from him, and she was given an interview, and she became, we won't say she was the first woman scout ever, she was clearly the first woman scout who did it on her own as a scout for the Phillies from 1946. She was also the last woman scout, because after she left that job, there were no more coming. She was in the Navy in the Waves during the war. According to legend, she batted 800 in her stint in the Navy. Now this is, of course, better. This is batting practice with 8 people trying to field the balls, which sounds pretty good to me at 800. Very special hitter she was. Fast, shortstop all her life. Very, very short. And eventually finished her career in Philadelphia with the Navy, and then went to Florida, where she retired. And in one of these pictures, you can see her at age 100. This one now, this was taken on her 100th birthday. She was buried in that uniform of the Phillies at the same cemetery that other baseball players were involved in, especially. The name is slipping right now. the guy who managed the 1917 White Sox, who was the Philadelphia guy. What? No. Kid Gleason, sorry. Kid Gleason was a local guy. He is buried. There's only like three baseball players. Edith just is the most recent one to be buried in that thing. So I'm going to turn this back to Leslie. Enjoy this panel. I hope that you're enjoying the conference so far, and I look forward to seeing more of you in more places in the next few days. Thanks.
Thanks, Dick. Edith Houghton's story is certainly one that sets the stage for our panel, and we have a wonderful panel, so not to take time away from them, I simply want to introduce our moderator for our panel, Robin Wallace. Robin has an impressive resume that includes her current law career. She works as a lawyer in Boston. But on the baseball side of things, Robin has had a number of roles to play, including a director of operations for Baseball for All. Some of you are familiar with Justine Siegel and working with that organization. She served as the executive director for the North American Women's Baseball League, the general manager for the Nashua Pride Professional Baseball, the assistant general manager for the North Shore Spirit. She's coached varsity baseball. And then, of course, on her own playing career, Robin was a member of the first USA baseball women's national team that won the gold medal in the first Women's World Cup in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada in 2004. Silver medalist at the Women's Baseball World Series in Japan, most valuable player, game-winning pitcher in Game 4 of that World Cup versus Chinese Taipei. And so Robin is going to moderate our panel and introduce you to the rest of them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leslie. And thank you all for coming out to our panel today, Women in Baseball, and letting us share some of our experience as something that we're most passionate about. Today, we are fortunate to have four highly accomplished and intriguing women with diverse baseball backgrounds who have inspiring stories to tell. Before we get going, please allow me to introduce our panelists. We'll start with Susan Ingersoll Papineri, who's the Director of Baseball Administration for the Philadelphia Phillies. She has had an interesting career, starting 30-some-odd years ago, working her way up from a secretary to an executive assistant for three different general managers to now being the Director of Baseball Administration. Some of her job duties include reviewing of contracts. She just told me she creates programs and life skills for these players, deals with their paychecks, insurance issues, bonuses, and moving allowances. So welcome, Susan Ingersoll Papineri. Next, we have Sarah Salty Sands Ferguson. She's one of my favorite as a member of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. She loved baseball since she was a little girl, since age 6, and happened chanced upon it. A friend went into a scout for the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League's house in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and she was the town tomboy, as she puts it, and knew that, you know, she'd been a bat girl for a men's professional team and played all the sports alongside the boys all her life. She got a tryout and made the Rockford Peaches just at the tail end of the league, and what a special person she is with a very inspiring story about living dreams. So welcome, Sarah Salty Ferguson. Perry Barber, I've known for many years. Most recently, we went to and instructed at a girls' baseball camp run by Baseball for All in Florida. We were bunkmates. She's an incredible person, lots of energy, has lots to offer, has done so much for girls in baseball. And more importantly, she's been one of very few women who was umpired at Major League spring training. In addition, I believe she was the first female umpire to do umpire Major League exhibitions in both the United States and Japan. She also assembled an all-women, four-women crew to umpire a Major League spring training game. She also umpires on Cape Cod and works international tournaments in Hong Kong and Taiwan. In addition to that, she's an advocate for girls' baseball, speaking, and travels the world reading and writing about the rewards of umpiring. Another interesting fact about Perry, she's a singer-songwriter. She's written some great baseball jingles. I've heard of myself. I wish she'd have brought her guitar here today. And another point of trivia about Perry is she's a former Jeopardy champion. So if you want to ask her about that after, that's fine as well. So welcome, Perry Barber. Last but not least, we have Kristen Mills Caldwell. She was a teammate of mine in 2004, and she has a nasty curveball, so you probably don't want to go up to bat against her. She's been playing baseball since age 5, and some of her accomplishments include playing on a high school state championship team, a Babe Ruth state championship team, and a gold medal in 2004, winning the gold medal against Japan in a 3-0 ball game. Very well pitched. She played again on the 2008 and 2012 teams, helping earn bronze and silver medals, respectively. And currently, she's an assistant varsity baseball coach at the high school, her alma mater, Caravelle Academy in Delaware, where she's held a position for 9 years. Welcome, Kristen Caldwell. On my way here, I was speaking to a friend and said I was going to a baseball engagement. And of course, as usual, they start talking about softball. And I think all our panelists will agree that's what we get a lot of. Oh, you must mean softball. You mean softball. Because there is this stigma out there that boys play baseball, girls play softball. So thank you for having us here so we can help create awareness that women can play the game, do play the game, and changes are occurring. And these women up here are pioneers in our sport, and they've helped break down barriers for girls to come. And we hope you spread what the stories you hear today so that future generations may have easier roads to travel than these women. We're going to start out, which is a general question. We'll let each panelist answer. We'll start with Salty down at the end, or close to the end next to Perry. We're going to start by having each of you describe your journey through baseball and how you came to be involved in the sport.
Okay.
I don't think you need to lean. You just need to speak up.
I was a town tomboy, and my father took me in, and I had this great love for baseball, although I had no clue. From the point on he took me to a game, my dream was to be a professional baseball player. And anybody asked me, what are you going to do when you get older? I said, I'm going to play professional baseball, not even knowing that such a thing existed. I was in high school in Bloomsburg in my senior year. I still did not know that such a thing existed. And a gentleman from our area who owned an insurance company happened to be down in Allentown, Pennsylvania, to a Mr. Charles Schuler. He was in his home, and he said there were balls and pictures of girls. Said to him, what's this? And he said, I'm a scout for the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. The man said, I know a girl can play there. So he brought a card home, and I'm sure I pestered my father to make the call. And we went to Mr. Schuler's home on a clear, blustery fall day. We went to a park, not a baseball park, and I threw him about 5 pitches, excuse me, and he turned around and started walking toward my dad and I, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I did something wrong. I hadn't touched a bat. I hadn't run. He walked up to my father and he said, I'm sending her to the Rockford Peaches, the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, but just because I'm sending her doesn't mean she's made it. And my dream came true, and I don't think my feet hit the ground from that point on.
Thank you, Salty. Susan, can you tell us how you got started in baseball?
Oh, actually, I was working at the University of Pennsylvania. Started out with the Phillies in a part-time capacity as a game day staffer. And I was approached by our PR director and said, hey, we need a gopher in our minor league department. Would you be willing to come on board full-time? I said, well, sure, I'll give it a try. I was tired of working with scientists and PhDs at the University of Pennsylvania. Not a lot of excitement going on there. And came down, interviewed for the job, and started out as a gopher in the minor league department. And basically, I've been there 30 plus years, and I've stayed in the baseball side of it. So I learned, I was educated, I had some great mentors, some people that weren't afraid to let a girl learn the rules and regulations. So I thought it was pretty special, and I've just grown with the job and developed my own, brought my own taste and specialties to it because men look at things a little differently than women do. So I just grew with the job, and obviously I've done okay because I've been there as long as I have. Through the ups and downs of baseball, too, for the Phillies anyway. I started my full-time career with them in August of 1980. So obviously I've seen the ups and the downs of our team.
That's pretty impressive. Can you tell us some of your day-to-day activities, maybe through the years?
Well, let's see. I have done all various things. When I first started, I would run minor league players or major league players to the doctor's office because they'd come into Philadelphia. They'd have to come up into Center City. So you run a player to the doctor's office, get them from point A to point B. Eventually, learning the rules and regulations was the key thing I wanted to do. So the basic agreement is something that, you know, 30 clubs have to know on top of the Major League office in New York. So I just took that, and that changes every 7 to 10 years, and just study it. It becomes my Bible. But right now, I've evolved it to be in different things and dealing with the players. There's over 300 of them in our organization. We only see 25 here, maybe 30 this year because there's so many injured hanging around. But 300 players in our entire organization throughout the world, so my job is to keep all that cohesive, keep track of them. I know where every one of them are every day, whether they like it or not. And we deal with their visa issues, getting them in and out of the country, health insurance issues. I now know their wives, their moms, their dads, their kids. I had a general manager years ago say to me, hey, remember when you started here and you used to be able to flirt with the ball players? He goes, how's it feel to be friends with their parents now? I'm thinking, oh, wow. But that's what it has. I've developed a relationship. One of the things we do when we're going out scouting our players for the draft is we put a CD together. Just what I discovered is in the baseball world, we compete against colleges. So when we're drafting players, we want to draft those high school kids who have the opportunity to go to college. Well, college kids get propaganda all the time sent to them from their colleges. So I said, we have to have propaganda. We have to go into their house and present them something. So we put a CD together telling them all the great things that we as the Phillies do and represent. And actually, some of the players, their moms have stopped me and said, you're the reason we came to the Phillies. You're the only club that showed a woman's face on anything that was presented to us. So the fact that they let me do a piece, even though it's the admin side of it, showing a female opens eyes because you have to relate to moms. Moms make a lot of big decisions in our lives. We all know that. So it was very impressive that our club allowed me the opportunity, which then allowed us to draft and assign, particularly assign players, that because of there was a woman involved in the operation.
Thank you, Susan. So, Kristen, you've been playing baseball since you were 5, and I'm sure many asked the question when you went and signed up that first season with your parents, why did you pick the baseball line over the softball line?
Well, for me, T-ball's T-ball. I mean, so boys and girls were playing that young. But we ended up, my parents, especially my dad, and my parents wanted me to have the opportunity after T-ball to choose what I wanted to play, softball or baseball. So we ended up, the one little league that we originally were district for, they said, oh, no, girls, you have to play softball after T-ball. So we used my grandmother's address so we could play in a different little league that didn't even have softball at all. So at the end of it, I could play baseball if I wanted, or I could switch and go to softball. But I loved baseball. I think when I really fell in love with it, I would say, was probably 8-year-old All-Stars. And you went through a whole season of the pitching machine and no live pitching yet, but then when you got to the All-Stars, it was live pitching. So that was my first taste of being on the mound. Still the only girl back then, but loved it, loved the game, loved pitching ever since. And definitely I know that I've been fortunate, and I know, you know, a lot of people can think of the girl on the little league team that they or their sons or something played against, and a lot of those girls run into a coach, a team, a league at some point where they have to stop playing. And I know that I was really fortunate that I never found that league or team. I had accepting teammates, great coaches, and I was able to stay with the game that I love to play.
Thank you, Kristen. And that, you know, it's the story of many girls. They get to be 12 years old, and they're no longer allowed to play, and they're pushed into the softball line. And it's not until later in life, whether it be Team USA or they find a women's league, that they actually get to go back to the game they love. And that's changing, but It's a slow road, but we're getting there, persistence over time. Perry, you have a very interesting story. One of my favorites is how you got involved in baseball on the other side as an umpire, if you'd share that with us.
My mother made me do it. That is true. My mother saw me reading a book written by that man over there, Larry Gerlach. I was reading Conversations with Umpires, The Men in Blue, Conversations with Umpires, just to absorb the information that was in it, because at that point I was reading every book I could get my hands on about baseball, because I'd been a trivia nut since I was 10 years old, and I was on Jeopardy when I was 19 years old. I was one of the youngest champions they ever had. And I'd also like to acknowledge my fellow Jeopardy champion, Gabriel Schechter, sitting over there. Two Jeopardy champions in one room. You don't often see that. Gabriel also got to play Watson. I didn't get to play Watson. I played a human. He played a computer, and he actually made a joke at Watson's expense. I like that. So anyway, my mother saw me reading this book, and in some strange fashion, she put it together in her mind that that meant that her daughter wanted to be an umpire. And when she suggested it to me, I looked at her and I said, "Well, Mom, you've seen me reading books about serial killers." But it happened to be 1981, and there was a strike looming on the horizon that started in June. The entire major league season was shut down. And at that point, my mother and I were driving every night to see either the Dodgers or the Angels, because she lived in Palm Springs. And one of the wonderful things about baseball is the connectivity that it establishes between parents and children. And it's not just the fathers and the sons. It's the mothers and the sons, the mothers and the daughters, the aunts and the nephews. It's a whole tangled web of interrelationships that baseball really makes so meaningful. And it brought my mother and me together in a way that we hadn't connected when I was growing up, because I didn't have any interest in baseball. It was awakened by my sole desire to beat a friend of mine at baseball trivia, which was why I was reading that book. Anyway, I just to be difficult and make my life very different than it had been, I answered this ad and showed up for my first Little League game. Somebody handed me a mask and a pair of shin guards and one of those big old balloon protectors, and I was out there on a field with a bunch of 10-year-old boys who were looking at me like I was a Martian and saying, "Is she gonna umpire our game?" And about 3 hours later, after I had been, for the first time in my life, subjected to real close-up and personal vituperation and vehemence and, you know, spewing from, "What are you doing here? You're ruining I had the best of intentions, but like a lot of people, I thought, "Well, I've been watching baseball for a year. I can get out there and do a pretty good job." But I found out the hard way that it's not that easy, no matter how good your intentions are. So right away I decided to go to umpire school, because there was something about the experience that did not deter me. It somehow made me want to keep doing it, because I just loved that connection of being out there and being a part of what I had only read about in a cerebral sense up until then. So I established this physical connection with baseball by umpiring. That's one of the reasons that I still do it today, because it's a constant renewal of stimulation and fun and enjoyment. I mean, it sounds odd, you know, why would getting yelled at be fun? But there's a lot more to umpiring than those very fleeting incidents where people express their displeasure in our faces. Most of what we do out there is not that. It's much more complex and challenging, and it's why I'm still doing it after 33 years. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you, Perry. We'll start with Kristen here. Tell us about any obstacles you may have encountered and what inspired you to persevere in the game that so few women have been involved with.
I would say for me, one of the biggest obstacles was playing Little League and Babe Ruth and then into high school. One of the biggest obstacles was kind of then what? Because I also played basketball, played volleyball, so I knew baseball probably wasn't going to be a realistic route to college for me. So the biggest obstacle was after high school, where can I play? So I played 4 years of basketball at the University of Delaware, and I actually don't even know how we found out about it, but we found out about a women's league in New Jersey, and I just showed up one game, and I hadn't thrown. I mean, I was in shape from basketball, but my arm was not. So I go out and pitch a 7-inning game in this women's league, and it just brought back everything that I loved about baseball. And so, I mean, I guess overcoming the challenge of where to play after high school, the greatest opportunity that I've probably come across in my life in sports is the opportunity to try out for the U.S. national team in 2004. And I never thought growing up playing against boys all the time that I would have a chance to play with a group of women that were that talented. And it's the shame of it, the U.S. program is that we don't get to be seen in this country very much. I mean, we were in Japan, we're in Canada, we were out in Utah. But the talent on the field blew my mind, and to have a team of women that were that talented behind me when I'm on the mound was a pretty cool feeling. And so that opportunity was amazing. And I'm definitely thankful for everything from USA Baseball, for sure.
Thanks, Kristen. Perry, you just mentioned some being yelled at, screamed at on the field, and some of the challenges you face. Can you describe some of those challenges and what led you to persevere? And as you said, who wants to be yelled at on a daily basis?
When I started umpiring, it was not a political statement. It was not something that I did to prove anything to anybody. It was something that I did solely out of a desire to find something fun to do. And I think also for my mother to get me out of the house, because at that time I was sort of camped out living with her when I wasn't really living with her. But There was nothing overtly political about my getting into umpiring, but as I've progressed through the decades, I have become politicized because of the complete stagnation and inertia, the lack of movement about drawing women into the pipeline that is the only avenue now for aspiring students to become professional umpires. Now, when I started, I didn't have any ideas about becoming a pro umpire, but I did go to professional umpire school right away because I wanted the good training. And while I was there, I began to get the idea that maybe it was a possibility, although I was much older than any of the other students, and I found out early on professional baseball doesn't like to put umpires out into the low minor leagues who are older than 26, 28 at the most. And I was 28 the first year that I went to umpire school. So right away I was dealing with the age factor as well as the female factor. But to me, that wasn't something that I ever regarded as an obstacle because, like I said, being political about what I did wasn't something that entered into my mind. And if it did, other people's, I just let it be their problem. I just wanted to keep doing it because it was fun, and I wanted to keep, you know, advancing and getting better games. I worked my way up from Little League to high school to college, got lucky and started doing these spring training games. And Susan mentioned something that I think is very important, that the path that we have traveled, it helps tremendously to have a mentor. I don't think I would have had the career that I've had, and I've been very fortunate, if I hadn't had one person who took an interest in me out of the kindness of his heart. His name was Arthur Richman, and at the time he worked for the New York Mets, and he started hiring me to umpire intra-squads for the Mets during spring training in 1985. And that was back then, women umpires were a bad joke. There was one woman umpiring in pro ball. And guess what? Now there are zero. The numbers have actually regressed. They haven't just not progressed, they've actually regressed. But whatever obstacles I faced, I always regarded them as a test of my character, not something that would make me want to cry or go cower in the corner or blame somebody for the fact that, you know, I had a bad game or that I wasn't getting the assignments that I wanted. I just always looked at it as something that I loved and I wanted to keep doing. And every game is the World Series to somebody, you know, who's playing or coaching. So I try and approach it that way. And the obstacles that I faced and, you know, in some ways still face, because there are little pockets of resistance here and there, although I'm happy to say that in pro ball that is about to change, and I think very rapidly, because there are one or two people now that are in positions to make a difference who are about to do it, and that's what's been missing. Somebody with the cojones, you know, to take that step and say, we can make this happen, it's about time, let's do it. And as far as women in the front office and playing on the field, you've had to do it one lawsuit at a time. I mean, I take my hat off to you, the girls that have played, and even getting into the front office, breaking into their, I really tip my hat to you. Umpiring was always kind of a lonely pursuit. I was almost always the only woman, but that's changing too. And even when I first started, I realized that if you're going to do it, you need a support system. And so I brought mine with me to umpire school. I made my twin sister go to umpire school with me my first year so I wouldn't be the only woman. And she majored in drinking, and I was majoring in umpiring. So we didn't make great roommates, but, you know.
Thank you, Perry. And Perry has a good point. Sometimes all it takes is that one coach or that one businessman or that one boss to open a door and give you an opportunity. And that's kind of like something I experienced in playing high school baseball. My career probably would have ended had it not been for one coach. And, you know, I'm grateful for all those people out there, the one person who lets the girl in the door. And there's more and more and more of those people now. And I also see the support systems getting bigger through organizations, through having a USA national team, and through people such as this panel and Sabre bringing us together to know that we're not the only one. And girls these days, I don't think, feel as isolated as they used to in Perry's day or even my day. Thank you so very much, Perry. Susan, how about you on the administrative side? I bet you're facing a different kind of obstacles, but somewhat parallel in ways.
Yeah, I faced a lot of obstacles because I was the girl in the office, and for years I was the only girl in our department. And, you know, I was told many a times, just stay there, you'll be fine, you'll get it. So for a long time I just sat and I listened, and I kept my mouth closed and my ears and eyes opened. And, you know, there are days I wanted to go kicking and screaming and crying because I wasn't being allowed to play in the sandbox. But after just listening, and that's what it took me just to sit and listen, and one day I came up with an idea, and this room full of guys were like, "What'd you say?" And I, whatever it was, I can't remember, I repeated it, and they're like, "Wow, I never looked at it that way." And then just little by little, they let me talk, and I realized I knew what I was talking about, just bringing a different perspective to it. And again, also learning the rules. One time you had a general manager who wanted to move a player a certain way, and I'm like, "You can't do that." He goes, "What do you mean? This rule apply. You do that, you will be the laughingstock of Major League Baseball." And sure enough, you cover a GM's butt, so he's not ridiculed by the president of the league at the time. That's what I learned to do. It's learning the basic agreement for me, and learning how to make sure we did not, and it was the organization, the general manager, I represented him as well, but I did not want the organization to be made a fool of. So those rules become more and more intricate over, it used to be so much easier 30 years ago than it is today. That's why there's more of us going over the rules and making sure each one of us make the club look good. So it's just, again, learning. I was raised with three brothers. So it wasn't always easy for me to keep my mouth closed. As my father said, I always had to have the last word. But for a few years, I just sat back, listened, read, and then spoke when I knew I was going to make a point, and it was well represented at that time.
Thank you,
and
Susan.
Going forward, it's still challenging. I still have my challenges, but when there's 300 of them and one of me, they're not always going to agree with me.
Well, you mentioned traveling with the team was difficult for you, and I imagine being in the hotels and transportation and whatnot.
Right.
Can you tell them a little bit about that?
I did for a while. One of our general managers, he wanted me out there representing the team. We always had a front office representation there if there were a problem, because there were times, because our players are young and they may get into trouble, so we didn't want the manager to have to step in, so we had somebody from the front office. So our GM had me out on that role, and for a couple of years I was the only female traveling. Well, that can be a challenge. You have to know your place, and I did. And I'm not going to go to the hotel bar, because what's she doing there? So I spent a lot of time on the road by myself. And I made it a routine. I went to the clubhouse. I saw people when I needed to see them, did the work that I needed to do. It was challenging. For a long time, dealing with some of the old salts and coaches, front office people are a little softer, but the coaches, what's she doing? What does she know? Why is she on the road? It was always she this, she that. And it was until I was, what's the best way? Was I going to go back and rat on them? Was I a tattletale? That's not what my role was there. My role was just to make sure that things were handled properly when there was an issue. And we did have issues on the road. Some players got themselves in trouble. Somebody had to deal with it. So it was just, again, each general manager's different. They all manage people differently. So I had to learn just, again, sit back, keep my mouth closed, stay out of trouble. And, one time I showed up, one of our dear coaches who's no longer with us, we had a joke running. What does she do? What does she know? Well, one day I walked in and I had a stopwatch. Our traveling secretary was in on it with me. We had a stopwatch with my name on the back of it. We just left it in the dugout. He's throwing the stopwatch. What does she know? Why is she timing the player? She has no right to be down here. Well, we let it go for about 3 days. Finally, on the fourth day, I said, that was your stopwatch, dummy. I just put my name on it. It's like, so you learn to play back a little bit.
You have to. You got to do it with a smile on your face. We wouldn't get through it sometimes.
That's right. Exactly.
Salty, you had a little bit different experience, one of which I think all female baseball players are truly envious of. I think we all wish there was a professional baseball league that we could play in, and how fortunate you were to have that opportunity. But I guess my question to you is, after the league was finished, I bet you were still in playing shape. What opportunities were there for you, if any, or obstacles to playing were there for you after the league was over?
Well, after the league was over, I came home, and of course we didn't talk about it because nobody back here knew about us. Penny Marshall hadn't been made that movie, we'd be the best kept secret in the world. But anyway, a gentleman came to me and he said, Salty, there's a lot of boys down at the Ball Diamond, they'd like to play ball, but nobody wants to coach them. Would you be interested? And, yeah, I had a 3-year-old son at the time. But I said, yeah, I'd be interested. But I said to him, if you want me to win every game at all costs, forget it, look somewhere else, I'm not interested. Because every boy that comes to that game is going to get in the game, whether we win or whether we lose. I said, there's only three things that those kids at 10 to 12 years old need to know. They need to know the fundamentals and the rules of the game. The second thing is mind. You need to learn to be as good a loser as you are a winner, because we don't all win in life. And you need to learn to be as good a loser as you are a winner. And the third thing, they should be having fun. And when a kid puts a uniform on and comes out day after day after day and he doesn't get to play, he's not having fun. So then a gentleman came to me. I only coached 1 year. We had a banquet for the boys afterward. And Clay Dalrymple, the catcher of the Phillies, was up. We signed balls for the boy. We were standing around talking that night. And someone said to me, are you going to be coaching next year? And my husband spoke up and said, no, she's not. And that kind of got me tuned up, because I'm my own person. and I don't ask permission. And he knew something I didn't know, because the next year my daughter was born and I wasn't coaching baseball again. And then there was a local store in Orangeville, and some of the girls around town wanted to play some softball. Now, I was not much of a softball player, but it was a ball. So I said, yeah, I'd coach them. So we had this girls' softball team, and when the girls, sometimes I had to go in and play myself because the girls didn't show up. Now, I didn't, you know, expect them to be professional, but I taught my kids, when you get into something, you see it all the way through, or you don't do it at all. And so when the girl come back for practice, I said, where were you the other night? Oh, well, some girl came over, and we were going over to Knoebels Grove. So I thought I'd go over to Knoebels Grove. Missed the gate. Today there's no girls' softball team, so to speak, in our area, but Knoebels Grove is still there. So, I don't know, today we get asked so much, do former players think there'll ever be another girls' professional baseball league? Our answer is basically no. The dedication isn't there. We didn't have anything. We were poor. We made our own fun. And we played baseball. We just played for the love of what we were doing. And so that's just the way it is. But today, the girls have too much. Through Title IX, they have everything. I wish it had field hockey when I was in school. I had nothing to play in high school. I played 1 year of varsity basketball my freshman year. That was it. We had nothing. So, and then I worked for the state of Pennsylvania, and then I also worked at the Middletown Air Force Base. And while I was there, we had a summer pro basketball team, and I played on that. We were known as the Olmsted Angels. And so when I talk to kids today, I always tell them, there I was, 19 years old, and already in my life I've been a peach and an angel. Now it doesn't get any better than that.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I mean, do you think that the popularity of softball and the lack of opportunity for women in baseball is one reason why you do not believe there will be another professional league?
Well, professional softball is pretty well established. Now, we go to Baltimore to the Bowie Bay Sox every year, and there's several girls' teams down there. However, it's just not happening for them to get into any kind of a league. I think when the Coors gave the Silver Bullets the money to go on tour, I think they did that wrong. They should have had two girls' teams that they put on a bus, toured them around the country, left them play each other. You'd see how good they were. But they were playing men who were 40-some and so forth, and I don't know whether they won one or two games, maybe the whole time. But to me, that was $1 million that could have been put into a league.
They started out pretty strong. I actually went to college with the owner's daughter and spoke to him a little bit about it. But they started out a week, not winning one game, I think, the first season. But by the end, they changed who their competition was, and I believe had an even record on the last season. And for those who don't know, they lost their funding because Coors was a sponsor. They didn't want to encourage alcohol for minors, and most of their fans were minors. So that was a very unfortunate thing. And then they weren't able to find that kind of dollar sponsorship. That was really tough. That was a blessing for about 4 years and short-lived, and probably could have been done better, but it was fun while it lasted. And I know that was my dream. I was a few years too young, and by the time I was old enough, they were pretty much defunct. But hopefully again we'll see women's professional baseball and in generations to come, but one step at a time. All right, so we talked about some of the obstacles you guys have encountered, and baseball is a game of the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. We've all experienced that in any aspect of the game. But I'd like to ask you guys, what accomplishment in the sport are you most proud of, and tell us a little bit about that. Harry.
Well, lasting this long? 33 seasons for me. And still going. Probably assembling a crew of
probably assembling a crew of four women to umpire a Major League spring training game. I did that in 2008, and nobody knew it was happening except me. It was my grand idea that I'd been playing with for several years because I had umpired with another woman from Florida named Mona Osborne for many years at the Mets games and Phillies games and other teams in the Grapefruit League. But I knew other women umpires, and I just had this idea that getting four of us out there at simultaneously would be something of an eye-opener. And it kind of was. It was funny because I'd been umpiring Mets games for 20 years, and I walk out on the field and nobody says boo to me. But I walked out there with my three partners, and three of us had ponytails hanging down our backs, and the other one had very short hair, so she didn't. But the ballpark, you know, in spring training games there were 3,000 people there, if that. But a hush fell over the crowd as we walked out. It was very funny. And, you know, of course, I didn't know girls could do that, Mommy. Yes, we can. And I used to feel happy when I heard, you know, said, that's the first lady umpire I've ever seen. But now, 33 years later, it's kind of disappointing, frankly, when I hear that. I'm like, I can't believe it, you know. Why? Why are there not more women out there? Umpiring is fun. It's something that women bring something to the table as far as umpiring goes. And I think we touched on it, the way we approach mind puzzles and situations, the way we respond to adversity, and the way we make inroads in areas where it's very, very difficult to, without, you know, creating a lot of chaos and bad feelings and, you know, making people say, what is she doing? Why is that girl here? I'm sure a lot of people said that about me when I was umpiring, too. What is she doing here? But usually, you know, after a game and they saw that I knew what I was doing, everything would be okay, or maybe not. I don't always umpire great games. I have bad games. Every umpire does. What was the question? Take me back to where I started.
What was your biggest accomplishment?
Oh, the biggest. Well, that was it. Putting that crew of four women together. And also making sure that I keep doing it so that I'm a visible exponent of the idea that umpiring is fun and it's something that women can do and have a very happy life. I mean, I've never actually been a professional umpire in the sense that I have not been a staff umpire of a professional league other than an independent league when I worked for the Atlantic League. But I've had a 33-year career that, you know, people go gaga over. And even when I think about it, it's pretty remarkable, you know, that I've umpired overseas, that I'm still doing it, that I'm still even standing up, frankly. that, you know, my knees are still good and, you know, my body is still capable of carrying me out there. And
well, I saw you out in over 100-degree weather in
Florida. Yeah.
Around all day.
Yeah,
when pretty
we
good
in
shape
Florida,
to me.
Yeah.
Perry says she lives in New York City, but every time I hear from her, she's in a different country or a different state. So, you know, I envy the exciting life she leads baseball-wise. Salty, probably know the answer to this if I were you, but what's the biggest highlight of your baseball career?
Just playing, fulfilling my dream, being able to play professional baseball, doing something that only 600 women had the opportunity to do. Makes it special, being in a movie. And my saving grace was that by the time I get there, they no sooner had to go to charm school. I might not have made it.
So you didn't have to go to charm school?
No.
Oh, lucky
that's
you.
That's my saving grace. I didn't have to go to charm school.
Did you have a chaperone?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, we had chaperones.
Were you the troublemaker of the group?
No. I was only 17 when I went there, and I was my chaperone had to be my mother, my father, and everybody rolled into one for me. So, yeah,
very
we got
nice.
Along great.
So, Susan, on your very long journey through baseball, what would be the biggest highlight of your career?
The 2008 World Series and being in the parade.
Definitely.
Coming down Broad Street. And the lovely piece of gold that I can wear on my finger, honestly.
Now, did they give you like a female size one? I didn't get like a pure gold one, but the Independent League, I got a small, but this big man's ring that gives me arthritis in my finger. Did they actually give you one size properly?
Actually, with what the Phillies did in 2008 for us, which was very unique, we had the choice. We did not know what the ring looked like until ring presentation day for the players. We had no idea. It was the top secret, which is what our president, David Montgomery, wanted. And he wanted the players to see their ring because we were getting a gift because of what they accomplished. So what our club did is they designed one ring, and it was three different sizes. They have the Jai Hugic ring, which most of you are Phillies fans have seen that, and then there's what we call the man's ring, which is extremely large, and then the female's ring, which is big. So we had our choice. They gave each employee the choice of any of those rings, or we could have a pendant. So
you didn't wear it today?
You know, I didn't. No. That was really dumb on my part, and I apologize for that. But yes, I got the middle size ring because I can wear it. Being a female at 6 foot, I can wear the medium, large ring. So yeah, I do wear it on occasion. It's a conversation piece.
Yeah,
but yeah,
absolutely.
That's to me the biggest highlight.
That's a good one to have.
That thing looks worth so much money.
So Kristen, you've had lots of accomplishments throughout your baseball career, probably basketball, other sports as well. What's your best memory or biggest highlight of baseball?
I would have to say in 2004 in Edmonton, pitching in the final and beating Japan 3-0. And beyond the gold medal, which definitely amazing, great feeling, but just being a part of the first team and knowing that probably our success would have something to do with the future of USA Baseball for women, and just knowing that we did everything we could on the field to make sure that future girls and women would have the chance to play USA Baseball. Also, I mean, aside from the win, my sister played too. My sister Bonnie, who's 3 years younger, she made the team too. And so traveling to Japan and back and up to Boston and up to Edmonton, we were gone about a month the first time that we played. And to do it with my sister was pretty great, all rolled into one.
Thank you, Kristen. You know, I attest to the fact that was an incredible baseball experience for myself as well. And just for that, you know, month and a half, you really got to feel like you were a professional baseball player. Even though we weren't paid, we weren't at work, and it was the closest, you know, we got to come to that. So it was a very special opportunity indeed. I want to be able to save some time for questions, so maybe briefly just respond in the next round of questions. So we can get to a Q&A session for our audience. We'll start with Perry, and specifically to Perry. What are you doing to reach out to spread the message that umpiring is a profession open and welcoming to women?
Besides working with you and Justine, which is a great partnership. Baseball for All is an organization that creates opportunities for girls and boys to play baseball in a safe and welcoming environment, and being part of that is really inspirational and remarkable. And thank you and Justine for making that possible, not just for me, but for everybody else.
Thank you, Barry.
It's really a great organization. Baseballforall.com or org, if you want to find out about
com,
it.
But we'll try and work at the time. Okay, it's org, .org, baseballforall.org.
There you go, baseballforall.org. Joining forces, networking, finding other women in other arenas of the industry of baseball, working on a multi-pronged approach to changing the paradigm so that women are drawn in to every area, because really we're not a threat. honestly, you don't have to fear us. We are not going to take over and feminize the baseball landscape and make it something unrecognizable and unappealing. It's just going to be a very few talented, dedicated women in every area who rise to the top, who want to work hard and achieve something special. And each one of us has done that in our own particular way. And I'm also working with somebody in minor league baseball named Justin Clem, who's the director of minor league umpiring. And for the first time since I started umpiring 33 years ago, somebody in minor league baseball has reached out and said flat out, "It's way past time to make this happen. I want to do this. Let's work together to make it happen." So I really think that in the next year or two, you're going to see women start to go to the umpire schools, because that's where it starts. They have to go to umpire school and place high enough in the class to be selected to go out into pro ball. It's a very competitive environment. The odds are not good even for men. Only 10 out of 200 from each school make it every year, and the odds of those 10 even advancing past double A are astronomical. So the carrot at the end really is not the brass ring as far as umpiring goes. You've got to go into it thinking that this is a job that, you know, it may be temporary, it may be for 4 to 6 months out of the year, but it's fun. You're not going to make a lot of money, but there's a certain spiritual enrichment to, you know, not making a lot of money doing what you love. And then when you do get to the major leagues, that all changes very quickly. You can make a very nice salary at the major league level. But I'm just still talking about it, writing about it, approaching girls when I see them playing any sport. I'm saying, have you ever thought about refereeing or umpiring? I talked to people in the WNBA. I was shocked to learn that they don't have a program for the athletes that are aging out of playing to be trained as referees for the league that they once played for. My question was, why not? Why isn't there, you know, some type of mechanism? So we're setting up an infrastructure. That's what's been lacking. There's been no infrastructure, no support, no funding. And all of that, as we have been pointing out, is starting to change. And I think it's going to make a big difference very quickly.
Don't mean to interrupt, but it's just, you never think of being an umpire. The kids come to camps and want you to play baseball. And I've seen over the past few years Perry implementing her umpiring sessions at the girls' baseball camp we instruct at. And they're so receptive to it. They get so excited. And I can actually see probably some of these girls in the future
and
actually
they're good
following,
at it.
They're
too.
Good at it, following their dreams in umpiring. No, thank you, Perry. We got to move on quickly here so we can get to some questions. I guess, Kristen, my next question is, have you noticed a way in which women's baseball has changed since between 2004, when you first played on the first ever USA Baseball national team, until 2012, when you last played, or the perception the public has about women playing baseball?
The perception, that's a tough one because usually we train in the United States and then we go play somewhere else. So people around here don't really get to see us play that much. I can say, having been to Japan twice now to play, the Japanese are probably some of the best baseball fans around. They don't care if you're a man or a woman. And that was actually pretty inspiring to be playing there. I mean, in front of thousands of people, I'm not sure, and I'm pretty sure we wouldn't get that kind of fan support here. But I would say, as far as the players, the difference between 04 and just last summer, I was one of the younger ones in 04, and I was like the old lady on the team. In 2012, I was the only one that had a child. I have a 4-year-old son. And I would say there were a lot of women, girls that were younger than me that were trying to make the change from softball to baseball in that tryout. And so for me, it would be nice to see a lot more girls coming up through baseball. And I know there's challenges with that, and I'm not sure the answer to that problem, but it would be nice for girls to have more opportunities to stay with baseball if that's what they wanted to do, because it's tough. I mean, when a softball player gets in the batter's box and they've never seen an overhand curveball before, I mean, that's a tough adjustment to make, taking leads, all of that stuff. So if at the national team level, if you don't have to spend time teaching that stuff that if you've been playing all along is basic, you could get into maybe some higher level stuff, I guess. And I'm just bringing it up. I'm not the problem solver of it, but it would be nice if girls could have more opportunities to play baseball if that's what they want to do.
Thank you, Kristen. And that is something here. You know, you have Japan, who has a developmental system through youth, high school, college, and now even a women's pro league to fill the gap. So we're trying to field a national team that's going to win gold medals, but we have no developmental system once the girls are, basically pushed into the softball line at age 12. Australia has a developmental system all the way up, as does Canada, and other countries are going that way as well. So it's just imperative that we catch up. It's our national pastime. And we want to see our team win some more gold medals, and so I agree with Kristen that, not the problem solver, but identifying the problem, we need a solution to provide an opportunity for those girls to play all the way up and develop baseball for girls at a young age and up through college, where a college baseball stadium is the most underutilized facility at these colleges and universities. There's plenty of room for the girls to play there too, even if it's a different time of year. But that's going off on a tangent. Let's open the floor up now for a Q&A session. And if you would, if I call you up, please go up to the microphone so that everyone could hear you. We'll go with the gentleman in the red right here.
I don't think I need a microphone.
Yes. Not really. The only part I was a little disappointed in, I thought they made the chaperones look kind of bad in the movie, and they weren't like that. They were great. And probably the league would not have existed without them. But I would say it's about 85. Oh, well, they Hollywoodize it. That's what sells movies. We weren't happy when we found out Madonna was going to be in it because, back a few years she was a little bit suspect. And we thought, are they going to make us look bad as ball players? But she did a great job, and we got to give her a lot of credit. So it's about 85%. They Hollywoodize it. That's what sells the movie.
Okay, next.
Hi, Dave Lippman from Newark, New Jersey. My question is for Susan. You run the life skills program for the Phillies. I'm curious about that because I've always been interested in how, these overgrown kids are taught to cope with the reality of the adult world. Could you tell us what that is and what your input into that program has been?
Sure. We've just started this over the last couple years because of the age of our players and what they have to deal with now. So last year we started a session. I had a woman from the Doylestown area actually come down and talk to our minor league players. And I called it Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. And it was a two-hour session as to what these kids deal with and what they're confronted with and what drugs and alcohol can do to you and how it impairs your decisions that you make. It was a two-hour mandatory. Everybody had to come. I break it down into three groups, AA, AAA, A-ball, because they're not old enough to drink yet, but they're doing it. And then, obviously, even the younger kids. And her presentation was phenomenal. They came in the room kicking and screaming and walked out of there with their eyes wide open going, wow, I had no idea. So we had a lot of visuals that we did. So we did that last year, and some of them actually this spring came to me. Is she coming back? Is she going to talk to us? I thought, well, you had it last year. No, this year we did Banking 101. What are you doing with your money? Do you know how to save your money? Do you know what your credit score is? Do you, the older guys, and none of them had any clue. The older guys are now starting to, maybe get out of baseball. They have families, buying a house. Do you know how to apply for a mortgage? Do you know what it takes? So every year I want to get a little bit better at that. I work with men who think the only important thing about our job is what goes on the field. I have to step back and say, no, it's not the only important thing, because 98% of the guys aren't going to make it past that field.
they're going to need to know what goes on in life. So we just want to continue helping them. So our players are going to give me input, tell me what they want to do. And another thing that I've added to the program last year is because the Phillies are very philanthropic, and our president is really key on this, we challenged our ball players to volunteer and give back to the community. And last year we started it, and this year we've continued it. And each of our players have to contribute 10 hours of volunteer time at their minor league cities where they are. They give us 5 hours in the first half, 5 hours in the second half. And we've made it a competition this year. I've got one player today, we started tabulating, I have one player at 40 hours and another one at 39 and a half hours. They want the prize. The prize is to come to Philly and be treated here for a weekend, but it's getting them passionate about something. Because when they get to the big leagues, again, we ask they get involved in our community here, so we want them to bring their passion up here to Philly.
Do you also address the problem a lot of players seem to run into of helping to watch out for guys who want to separate them from their money?
We do. That is some of the things that we talk to them about. And that's something I may want to do going forward, more financial advisement going forward, finding the right person to come in and talk to them. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. Abby Rosario, New York. This question is for Salty. I think I heard you say that you missed out on charm school. Was that correct?
Yes.
I'm just wondering if there's a story behind your name that might suggest you might have benefited from charm school.
I don't know. I don't know. You'd have to ask the other players, I guess.
Well, my question is, we hear a lot of talk about a woman GM. What's it going to take that to become action? Any thoughts on how that's progressing? A woman general manager.
Well, we have a few female assistant GMs.
No, I know. I mean, all the way to the top. Is that in our near future, you think?
Yes, it will happen. I can't give you how many years from now, but yeah, I will see it. It will happen. The game is changing, and there are more women who are out there.
It just seems the position is also changing, too, which is, I think, making it a much well-rounded position, which obviously women are fully capable of handling. So.
Right. Major League Baseball has lots of diversity efforts going on, and I think they're making efforts to get more and more women and minorities involved. So hopefully we'll see that in the near future. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sheila Sikorsky. I'm from Turnersville, New Jersey, right over the river. And I just went to, first of all, I want to say I had the opportunity to play with Kristen and other women in the Philadelphia Women's Baseball League, which lasted about 7 years or 8 years. And I was 52 years old when I started. 45 years after I wanted to start, and I was not allowed. Okay. But my question is, what can the people in here do to start stimulating some of the things you talked about, getting women, getting girls to say, no, baseball is what I want to play, getting managers and coaches and ADs to say, this girl, we need to teach her more and better skills instead of just say, put her out there. Okay, she didn't do well, she's out now. Okay, we've seen two people go to college in the last few years. One of them has been shifted to softball. Okay, the other is still going in baseball. But what can we do? At all of us individuals.
Good question.
Yeah, not much.
Well, I believe awareness. And this is one step right here. Also, not taking no for an answer. Keep moving forward like you're doing what you're doing. Dare to dream. Share that with your kids, your friends, your nieces, nephews, grandchildren, and persistence over time. We got to keep moving forward, breaking down barriers, and showing the world that women can play baseball. They can be umpires. They can be general managers. They can be scouts, announcers. All of these things, there's no reason why women shouldn't be involved in the game. They've proven for over 100 years that they can in different roles. And basically eradicating the stereotype that boys play baseball, girls play softball. I mean, that's it right there. And I'm sure if you guys have any thoughts that I didn't touch on.
No, just talk amongst yourselves. Talk to your friends, your neighbors, encourage girls. Anytime you see a young girl, encourage them to watch baseball, go to a baseball game, sign up for Little League. Just
talk, read, write,
blog.
Blog.
Perry has
sing.
A blog you guys should read. What's the name of your blog?
Dishing It and Taking It Too. So.
Dishing It and Taking It Too. So you guys should check that out. It's good stuff.
I'm too old to do anything much physically, but I talk to high school kids, elementary kids, talks all over, and try to encourage the girls. I've probably given away 15 to 20,000 baseball cards. Always put on, always follow your dreams. We had a girl in our area this year. She pitched a perfect game, three no-hitters, actually. And I said to her coach, who's coached her, he's a good friend of mine, and he's been coaching for 40 years, and I said, where's she go now? She's just got out of Little League. He said she's going to softball, because when they get up to that, the boys say no, you know, they don't want them to play. What are you going to do?
Boo.
Well, hopefully we're changing that, and all girls will have a place to play, and baseball for all will be true to itself.
I first want to compliment that previous question, because that was the other one I was going to ask, is what can we do? My question actually, you know, I'm very interested in seeing women's professional ball teams, you know, leagues. I'd like to see the equivalent of the majors for women. I'd like to see women in the business of it, women umpiring. I'd like to see all of that. But I guess in my ignorance, there's a part of me that believes that baseball is a sport that, because of its elegance, would enable women and men to play on the same field. And I'm curious, and in my ignorant dreamingness, I feel like I won't be satisfied until I see a woman major leaguer taking the field with men, one or more women major leaguers taking the field with men. And I'm just curious if you, the experts, the experienced, if there's any part of your vision for success beyond just having women's leagues, but actually having women and men playing professionally at the highest level.
We're running out of time here, but maybe I'd like to hear, see if everyone could just give a brief, you know, maybe one or two sentences as to what you think about that. I think it'd be interesting to hear everybody's opinion. And then we'll have two more questions and wrap this up. Perry, why don't we start with
yes,
you?
Yes, integration is not just black-white. It's male-female. And whatever way we can get out there and be on the diamond, whether it's with other women or with, you know, the opposite sex, we're going to, like I said, it's a multi-pronged approach. We're not just going to try one thing. We're trying everything, and we'll see what sticks. So.
If they're good enough, they belong.
And I think as time goes on and girls start playing with boys, it becomes more acceptable, mm-hmm. and hopefully they get to high school, they get to college, and there is that girl who excels, and she will be on the boys' team because she's as good as, if not better than them. And then someday that will happen. She'll be in the minor leagues and then make it to the major leagues with her.
Oh, yeah, I just agree with what everyone else said, really, that if someone's good enough, that would be great. I mean, on the national team, we had a girl that was a switch hitter that was hitting them out at, you know, major league-type fences, and we're in batting practice. I'd never seen a girl do that. I mean, she's hitting them out left and right. And, I mean, so I think it would take, you know, the extreme case to be able to do it. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think it has to be girls with girls all the time. As long as they're out there playing on the field somewhere, it's great.
As I agree with them as well, it's been prophesized for a long time that, you know, we will see a female on a major league diamond, and I believe it's possible, more so than other sports, but you see it in other sports such as hockey, and I mean, you know, even girls playing collegiate football and things of that nature. So why not baseball? It's not a contact sport, and if we accept it in other sports, I play polo on horses, and it's co-ed, you know, 90% of the time, and that's another contact sport and a sport of strength and skill. I don't know why it can't happen in baseball, and I believe it will. That would be a dream come true of mine. Like most people here, since I was 5, I dreamed of being a professional baseball player. I wanted to play for the Atlanta Braves, and I hope there's a little girl out there right now who will be putting on an MLB uniform in my lifetime. So I hope to see that. Good question. Thank you very much.
The question for the Phillies representative, I think only you could answer this. I have a special interest in Latino players. I wrote a book on Dominican players in the U.S. and the struggles that they had. With that in mind, do the Phillies have special programs to help Dominican players or any Latino players adjust?
That's a great question. Yes, we do. At our academy in the Dominican, as well as our academy in Venezuela, we start down there as soon as they sign their contract. We right now have English lessons, so they are learning. We have then life lessons for them, trying to assimilate in the United States and what it's like when they get here. And we just started this year in the Dominican because their education is so poor. Most of those players barely get out of eighth grade. Our players are now going to class as well. So they're playing baseball, they're developing their skills, they're learning English, and we are graduating kids. They're now going, we have kids going to school from sixth grade through 12th grade, and they have to go to class 3 or 4 days a week. So thank you, great question, I appreciate it.
I think this question is sort of piggybacking off something that Kristen said. You were talking about how you were the only player who had a kid, and I was just wondering, because you know the life of an athlete is so short as it is, I would think, you know, having kids would, you know, it's a good year of your life right there. What exactly is the, you know, how exactly, I guess, talk about sort of the tension between, I guess, you know, I would think it would be kind of hard to, you know, be a mother and have an athletic career and that sort of thing. You know, I guess the rest of you can chime in.
Sure. I mean, for me, I know I'm lucky that I have my parents that can babysit when I'm working out or whatever, and they're obviously very supportive. My husband, I'm not sure what I'm going to do in the future with USA Baseball, but my husband's like, man, as long as you can make the team and you can wear the USA on your jersey, you better play as long as you can. So I'm very lucky that way to have that support. But it was really hard. We were gone about 3 weeks last summer. I wanted to definitely play one more time post having my son to kind of prove to myself that I could get back in shape and all of that. It was really tough. It was really tough to be away from him. But he knew that mommy was playing baseball for the United States, and so that's really cool. He has one of those fat head things, those sticky things on the wall of me pitching. So that's kind of cool. So, I mean, for me, I know that I'm just lucky with the people that I have in my life that I can have a balance, and it's worked out pretty well.
But, I mean, I guess my question was more, you know, did you think about, because I would think pregnancy would probably take a year out of, you know, your entire athletic lifespan and that sort of thing. I mean, is that kind of a constant, you know, tension and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, for the U.S. team especially, it's every other summer. So, I mean,
so you can sort of time it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of weird, but yeah, you can kind of time it. And the year that I had my son was an off summer. I had him in June of an off summer, and then I went back to tryouts that next summer. So, yeah, I mean, probably some people may say when it's time to have kids, that's it. I don't want to play anymore, but I wanted to kind of hang in there, and it was able to work out.
Thank you very much. We're over time here, but I just want to say thank you to Sabre for having us and letting us share our stories. And to Leslie Heafy and Peter Mancuso for all they've done, and for the audience and having an interest in women in baseball, and particularly for our panelists who've taken time out of their busy schedules to be here for us. They're truly pioneers in baseball who are helping pave the road for future generations of women to be involved in our great game. And I encourage all of you to spread these stories of these incredible women, so that more women aren't afraid to step up to the plate and make more contributions to our national pastime. Thanks again.
Thank you.